we don't want to take that for granted, but to come expectantly. And thank you, Amanda, for that song. We used to sing Shine, Jesus, Shine all the time, you know, and special to hear that. And I thought, boy, you know, fill this land with the Father's glory. We need to pray that again. On November 30th, 1991, fierce winds from a freakish dust storm triggered a massive freeway pileup along Interstate 5 near Coalinga, California. 14 people died, as many as 150 were injured, as topsoil whipped by 80-kilometer-an-hour winds reduced visibility to zero. The afternoon holocaust left a three-mile trail of twisted and burning vehicles, some stacked on top of one another 100 yards off the side of the freeway. There were 93 cars and 11 tractor-trailer trucks involved in one of the worst chain reaction accidents in U.S. history. Unable to see their way, dozens of motorists drove blindly ahead into disaster. And that happened near Fresno, California, where I went to school. We lived for a couple of years, and this was just a couple of years after that. I want you to imagine what life would be like if you were blind. Would you drive? I found a piece of cloth that I think would work well for a blindfold. It was in the costume room downstairs, a piece of fabric, and wondered if anyone would want to blindfold themselves for the duration of the service. Because we sometimes think, well, masks are uncomfortable. What if you had to wear a blindfold all the time? Just want you to think about, no one seems to be taking me up, and I don't really feel like doing that either. So today we'll consider a story of a blind man who met Jesus, and he came to see. And we'll discover others who thought they could see, but were blind. Maybe like those who thought they could see as they drove down the highway, and all of a sudden they crashed into other people. So I'm going to work through this story. Please notice the perspectives of there's five groups or individuals, and particularly the blind man and the Pharisees. And then I'm going to make some points about what it means to see. So I'm in John chapter 9, and I'm going to work my way through it. If you want to be following in the text, feel free to look it up. As Jesus went along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned? This man or his parents, that he was born blind?" "Neither this man nor his parents sinned," said Jesus, "but this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him. As long as it is day, we must do the works of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world." So the blind man, he's the main character in our story. And he wasn't just blind, he was born blind. And this is significant because it leads to the disciples' questions that we're going to get to in just a moment. And it also shows that the genuineness of the miracle. I think sometimes people think, well, if someone, well, all of a sudden they just can't see, well, maybe there was a remedy. But here's a congenital condition. He was blind from birth. Jesus comes along and he heals him. So the second group of people, they are the disciples. And for them, the blind man raises a theological question. In Exodus 34, it says, The Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands, and forgiving wickedness, rebellion, and sin. Yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished. He punishes the children and their children for the sin of the parents to the third and fourth generation. So the disciples, like others, they associate suffering with sin. You know, there is someone who has a problem, they must have done something bad. And, I'm sure they had heard of Job, but somehow maybe that hadn't sunk in, and people continued, like Job's friends, to think, well, bad things happen to bad people. But this man was born blind, so whose sin was it? Because there is this verse that I just read, you know, so Is it the man's sin or is it the parent's sin? That's their question. Jesus said neither. There are simply troubles in our world. They come to all of us, and we often do not know why. So it's not about blaming anyone, finding fault in others. It's, you know, sometimes things happen, and we don't look for the fault in them. We just turn them to God. Jesus sees the man's problem as an opportunity to minister, to work. Jesus says he's the light of the world, and we associate light with being able to see. John, he had said that about Jesus in the introduction to the gospel. In chapter 1, verse 9, he says, "The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world." Jesus declared that about himself in chapter 8, verse 12. He said, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." So Jesus, he sees this as an opportunity to bring his light into the world, into our situation. Let's look at verses 6 and 7. After saying this, he spit on the ground, made some mud with the saliva, and put it on the man's eyes. "Go," he told him, "wash in the pool of Siloam." This word means sent. So the man went and washed and came home seeing. I find it very interesting how Jesus did miracles in different ways. You know, like sometimes he just said, "Be healed." Sometimes he touched people. Last week we saw that he took a boy's lunch and he gave thanks for it and distributed it, and it just multiplied. Today he spits on the ground. He makes some mud. He puts mud on the man's eyes and tells him to go and wash. We're going to come back to that. The man went, he goes to this pool that commentators say, you know, was on the south end of the city. It might have been some distance from where he was. When he comes home, he receives sight. He comes home, but Jesus is no longer there. So let's carry on. His neighbors and those who had formerly seen him begging asked, "Isn't this the same man who used to sit and beg?" Some claimed that he was. Others said, "No, he only looks like him." But he himself insisted, "I'm the man." "How then were your eyes opened?" they asked. He replied, "The man they call Jesus made some mud and put it on my eyes. He told me to go to Siloam and wash, so I went and washed, and then I could see." "Where is this man?" they asked him. "I don't know," he said. You know, the neighbors, they don't know what to do with this. You know, like you've seen a person who's been blind, and all of a sudden, you know, now he can see, and some of them think, well, you know, it can't be the same guy. Things like this just don't happen. And others say, well, yeah, but he's the man, and he says, "I'm the guy." They're just baffled by this. They have this amazing miracle, you know, a person who's blind now sees, and they don't know what to do, and they take him to the Pharisees. And I think that's just kind of tragic, you know, like here's something incredible happens. Like picture yourself in that situation. And they just hand him off to others. You know, they're not going to be part of this. They just don't know what to do. I think, man, they missed an incredible opportunity. Like if your neighbor, you know, suddenly has something like this happen, you know, what would you do? Just say, well, yeah, go. I think the lesson from the neighbors is, like, don't miss what God does. Sometimes I notice as I get to know people, you know, as I listen to them or listen to others talk about them, you know, I come to realize that these people are doing some really special things. You know, like here's a person that they have amazing connection with God and prayer. They spend lots of time. They go deep, or they care for their neighbors in a special way. They're doing things that I think are amazing ministries. I think over time in this church, as I've become, I have become aware of some of the significant ways that many of you are making a difference that I maybe didn't see when I started, but over time being with people, I see, wow, I mean, this person is sharing with their neighbors, and this person's doing something else, and God is using you. And I think we need to see that, what God is doing in the lives of people around us. Let's continue, verses 13 to 16. They brought to the Pharisees the man who had been blind. Now the day on which Jesus had made the mud and opened the man's eyes was a Sabbath. Therefore the Pharisees also asked him how he had received his sight. He put mud on my eyes, the man replied, and I washed, and now I see. Some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath. But others asked, how can a sinner perform such signs? So they were divided. Then they turned again to the blind man. What have you to say about him? It was your eyes he opened. The man replied, he is a prophet. So the Pharisees, they questioned the man, the formerly blind man. And their concern is that Jesus had done this on the Sabbath. Like, for them, it's all about the Sabbath. Like, I think if I saw a person who had been blind and I'd known, let's say, for 20 or 30 years or whatever it was, and all of a sudden one day he can see, I think my first thought would be, what day is it? Like, does this work? Is this okay? But they were caught up in a very narrow way of thinking. You know, it had to be all about the law. And if it was you know, outside the parameters of that they understood that God worked and his rules, then it's not right. Now, I think we should notice at this point that the Pharisees were divided. There were some that were going to give Jesus the benefit of the doubt and not think right away that he was a sinner. Like, they seemed to be supporting this. But after that, we don't hear about them anymore. I don't know if these dominant Pharisees had shouted the others down or what happens, but those, the ones who weren't thinking in that way, we don't hear from again. So from now on, the Pharisees will be just those who are against Jesus. Picking up again at verse 18. They still did not believe that he had been blind and had received his sight until they sent for the man's parents. Is this your son, they asked? Is this the one you say was born blind? How is it that now he can see? We know he is our son, the parents answered, and we know he was born blind, but how he can see now or who opened his eyes, we don't know. Ask him. He is of age. He will speak for himself. His parents said this because they were afraid of the Jewish leaders who already had decided that anyone who acknowledged that Jesus was the Messiah would be put out of the synagogue. That was why his parents said, he is of age, ask him. I've read the Gospels enough times to know that I expect to be disappointed by the Pharisees. But one of the very sad aspects of this story is the response of the man's parents. You know, like, this man is their son who they had raised, who I would like to think they loved and cared for, and yet, you know, they don't, you know, they kind of distanced themselves from their son, their child. And what they said was true, like he is of age, you know, you can ask him, he can speak for himself, but really, they were not supporting him in any way. They weren't standing with him because they were afraid. And it wasn't like there was a threat of execution or that they were going to be beat up or something like that. It was simply that, well, they could be ostracized. They could be isolated. They could be put out of the synagogue because they'd side with Jesus, the Messiah. And so they back away. They don't support. They leave their son on his own to face all these angry religious leaders. I think the parents were blind too. Verse 24, a second time they summoned the man who had been blind. Give glory to God by telling the truth, they said. We know this man is a sinner. He replied, whether he's a sinner or not, I don't know. One thing I do know, I was blind, but now I see. Then they asked him, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? He answered, I've told you already, and you did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciples too? Then they hurled insults at him and said, you are this fellow's disciple. We are disciples of Moses. We know that God spoke to Moses, but as for this fellow, we don't even know where he comes from. The man answered, now that is remarkable. You don't know where he comes from, yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners. He listens to the godly person who does his will. Nobody has ever heard of opening the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. To this they replied, you were steeped in sin at birth. How dare you lecture us? And they threw him out. You know, the further the interrogation went, the bolder the man became. And he finally declared that the man who healed him must be from God. At this, the Pharisees, they're angry, and they replied that, you know, he was born in sin. Remember the disciples' question? Who sinned? This man or his parents? Jesus said, neither. The Pharisees, they concluded that this man sinned because he was coming to believe in Jesus. The Pharisees never got it. Look closely at verse 26. It says, they asked him, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? John includes a detail in this healing which is easy to overlook. Jesus made mud and put it on the man's eyes. Why? Why did Jesus not just say, be healed? J. Ramsey Michaels, in his commentary, he notes that the problem with the Sabbath in this case seems to be that Jesus needed the mud, needed K-N-E-A-D, needed the mud in performing the miracle. The Mishnah lists kneading among 39 activities that are prohibited on the Sabbath. So it seems it was the procedure, not the healing itself, that violated the Sabbath law and most concerned the Pharisees. The point of making mud surfaces in the retelling of the story in verses 11 and 15. This is the Pharisees' concern. What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? They really didn't see. They're confronted with this amazing happening. A grown man who had been blind from birth received sight. And their concern was that Jesus mixed a little bit of mud on the Sabbath. They didn't rejoice with the man. They didn't stand in awe of the healing or the healer. They were bothered that their interpretation of God's law was violated. They were blind. They couldn't see what God was up to. Because, you know, just like a horse has blinders on, they just were very zeroed in on both the law of the Old Testament, and then their interpretation of the law, even more so. The chapter ends with Jesus, the blind man, and the Pharisees, and I'll read these last verses. Jesus heard that they had thrown him out, and when he found him, he said, do you believe in the Son of Man? Who is he, sir? The man asked. Tell me so that I may believe in him. Jesus said, you have now seen him. In fact, he is the one speaking with you. Then the man said, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped him. Jesus said, for judgment I have come into this world so that the blind will see and those who see will become blind. Some Pharisees who were with him heard him say this and asked, what? Are we blind too? Jesus said, if you were blind, you would not be guilty of sin. But now that you claim you can see, your guilt remains. Last Sunday, we looked at chapter 6. Jesus fed the 5,000, and it's an amazing miracle. But Jesus says, well, that's not it. That's not the point. The miracle lunch pointed to the bread of life. Jesus said, work for food that endures to eternal life. Certainly the miracle was great. It was amazing. Jesus does miracles. But he said it points to something else. In this chapter, Jesus heals a blind man. But again, it's about more than the miracle. Jesus uses it to draw our attention to what it means to truly see. Physical blindness and sight become metaphors for spiritual sight and blindness. It's like an illustration. Jesus draws attention from natural things to show us how things work in the spirit life. Blind persons have something blocking their sight. For a person born blind, there's a physiological problem. For those who drive in a dust storm, there's dust that just blocks their ability to see. For the Pharisees, it's legalism. They just, you know, can't see past that. Verse 16, some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath. At least according to the way they interpreted all that. So Jesus was out, and because, you know, Jesus does something so amazing, and they can't see that. Jesus came into their world, and he loved unconditionally and perfectly, and he had this amazing compassion for people. He performed great miracles. He opened God's word for people, and they missed him. It was tragic. I didn't wear glasses till I was in my 20s. I'd had my eyes tested when I was a child, and they were good. And one day I was sitting in the back of the church, and I noticed that the people beside me were reading the screen, and I couldn't read that screen. Decided to go get my eyes tested again. Sure enough, the optometrist said I needed corrective lenses. So I got glasses, and I've worn them ever since. Didn't really want to wear glasses, didn't really want to have imperfect eyesight, but that was the reality. Our chapter ends with Jesus telling the Pharisees that their guilt remains because they claim to be able to see. You know, I could have said, no, I can see. I do not accept that I need glasses. Our son, he got glasses when he was in, I don't know, grade 4-ish, somewhere in there. And boy, he didn't want to be the kid who needed glasses. But he needed them. In verse 39, Jesus said, for judgment I have come into this world so that the blind will see and those who see will become blind. In Christ, blind people come to see. And those who think they can see are shown to be blind. So now I want to consider how we come to be able to see. And the first thing I believe is we humble ourselves. Think of the Pharisees. Think of people who are blind. We acknowledge our blindness. We ask for sight. Many blind people, they call for help, even if it means drawing unfavorable attention to themselves. We see blind people in the Gospels. Matthew 9:27, as Jesus went on from there, two blind men followed him, calling out, have mercy on us, Son of David. Mark 8:22, they came to Bethsaida and some people brought a blind man and begged Jesus to touch him. Mark 10:46-52, then they came to Jericho as Jesus and his disciples, together with a large crowd, were leaving the city. A blind man, Bartimaeus, was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. Many people rebuked him and told him to be quiet, but he shouted all the more, Son of David, have mercy on me. Jesus stopped and said, call him. So they called to the blind man, cheer up, on your feet, he's calling you. Throwing his cloak aside, he jumped to his feet and came to Jesus. "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus asked him. The blind man said, "Rabbi, I want to see." "Go," said Jesus, "your faith has healed you." Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road. You know, everyone else is saying, be quiet, shut up. And he sees an opportunity and he calls out. It doesn't matter. He has a need. John doesn't tell us, but I'm sure the blind man in John 9 also desperately wanted to see. We certainly see his gratitude when Jesus helped him. We see this in people with addictions. The key to overcoming, to living sober or overcoming whatever the addiction is, acknowledging that they have a problem, that they cannot change. And until they say, "Yeah, I have a problem," they don't get help. They don't change. It's when they can say, "Yeah, I cannot overcome this," that the journey to recovery begins. Step one of the 12 steps. We admitted we were powerless over our addictions and compulsive behaviors, that our lives had become unmanageable. Person says, "I can't stop drinking. I can't stop gambling. I can't stop sinning." We got to come to that point that I cannot solve my problem. The first step is humility. We must humble ourselves to become Christians. We must humble ourselves to live as Christians. As long as we're like the Pharisees and say, "I'm right, I know, I don't accept anything else," we're never going to find our way and be able to see. Two, we put our faith in Jesus. We are powerless to change, powerless in ourselves. Only God can change us. The Pharisees, they thought they didn't need Jesus. They weren't willing to see what happened before them. They didn't like it that Jesus suggested that they couldn't see. They weren't willing to accept that. The blind man, however, when he came to know who Jesus is, he said, "Lord, I believe." And those are such key words. "Lord, I believe." "Lord, I believe." We put our faith in Jesus. It's him. And then three, we worship. The formerly blind man, he worshiped Jesus. His response, when he came to know who Jesus was, it's, "I believe," and he worshiped. I think worship probably involves a lot of things. It involves praise and adoration, giving glory, saying thank you. When it's about Jesus, Jesus healed him, and he worships. Worship is, we acknowledge Jesus is Lord, and all the glory is his. And we live that way. It's about him. It's about us. So therefore, for our obedience, we live knowing Jesus is Lord. For we pursue the truth. It's interesting that the disciples ask a question in verse 2, and then they're not heard from again. Often in the Gospels, Jesus rebukes the disciples for their comments or their actions. They say some stupid things. They get into trouble, and Jesus has to go as far once as saying, "Get behind me, Satan," when Peter, tries to say, "Lord, you're not going to suffer. Don't say those things." And Jesus rebukes his disciples. But not here. Jesus takes their honest question. They want to know. And I think when we ask an honest question, and he answers it in a profound way, not just for them, but for us. The man's blindness, it was not about sin. God chose, through Jesus, to display his power, in this case, through healing. And through their question, we are given to understand spiritual sight and blindness. It's good to ask questions and to seek to understand God's ways. We learn and we come to see as we seek God's truth. In the previous chapter, chapter 8, Jesus confronted the Pharisees, as he often did. And Jesus said, "If you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." And a few verses later, Jesus said, "The devil is a liar and the father of lies." Truth and lies are like sight and blindness. There are many ideas in our world about God, about what it means to live for God, about who we are as the children of God, probably almost every other subject. And I think we need to ask some questions and seek truth. They had looked at an Old Testament passage. Now they had a situation. Well, what does it mean in this situation? And Jesus answered. James said, "If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you." And a little further on in that chapter, James suggests what may help us find God's wisdom. "Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry." I noticed the Pharisees, they were just the opposite. You know, they spoke just boom right now, and they were angry. They didn't listen very well. And I think sometimes we need to step back and, well, I'm going to listen. Because that's how God is going to touch us. And so we need to ask questions, to seek truth. We want to know God and what it means for us to live faithfully for Him. And lastly, we grow into sight over time. And this is where receiving spiritual sight may be different from physical sight. Even in John 9, we see a progression through which the blind man came to see spiritually. When he was first questioned, all he knew was that a man called Jesus healed him. At the second questioning, he said, "Well, Jesus must be a prophet." At the third questioning, he came to the conclusion that, well, Jesus must be from God. Finally, when Jesus talked to him, he said he would like to believe in the Son of Man. Jesus introduced himself to the man, and then the man said, "Lord, I believe," and he worshiped him. So the man came from no knowledge, or just the knowledge that there was a man named Jesus, to being a believer. And for him, it happened all in one day. Often it takes longer. It takes longer for us, takes longer for others, those we want to share Christ with. And so we need to understand that and persevere. We would like God to instantly give us perfect sight. I would, I'm sure you would too. We'd like to understand the scriptures, to know God's will, to have full insight into life's complexities and how we're to live and minister in the world. Instead, like it was for the disciples, God calls us to a journey of growth. And as we come to see, the picture becomes more and more clear and beautiful. And so I think it's not about just saying a prayer today and, well, now I'm going to have perfect sight and I'm going to know everything about God's will in every situation. I think we journey with Jesus and we grow and he shows us about the things that come in our world. And I was reflecting on this after I'd prepared, and I thought, you know, I think there's another thing here, and that is Jesus gives us vision like 20/20, if I can use that analogy. And often we want telescopic vision. Like we want to see beyond. We want to see into the future. A farmer wants to, you know, wouldn't you like to know exactly what the weather's going to be every day for the rest of the year and what the commodity prices are going to be? And, oh, we'd like to know a lot of things. And Jesus says, I show you this much. I show you me. And we get to know Jesus, and that guides us through the situations as we go forward. There's still something about living by faith, not just, well, now I have it all together and I don't need God. We need God on an ongoing basis to continue to see. And I think there are some big things in our world. I mean, Arnold prayed for an end to COVID, or are we able to get on with things? And people have questions about our response. I think look to God and His Word and how we are to live as we go forward. Helen Keller, maybe you know her story. She was a lady, incredible lady. She was blind and deaf. And on one occasion, a little girl looked into Helen Keller's eyes, into her face, and asked, "Isn't it awful to not have two good eyes?" And Helen replied quietly, speaking with her fingers through Miss Sullivan, who was her companion and communicate for her. She said, "Not half so bad as having two good eyes and not being able to see." Arnold, please come. Close the service.